episode 7 of Chronicling Christy. Today with my special guest, Hilary, the renal dietitian. So today I've asked for questions from you guys, the listeners. So we're going to be going through a list of questions and Hilary's going to be trying her best to answer. So our first one today is about blood levels. So are potassium and phosphate the only levels I need to watch as a kidney patient?
So potassium and phosphate are really important for everybody to be aware of. And there is a certain range in which they need to be kept in to keep everything safe and your blood levels looking good. So although potassium and phosphate are the one things that the elements that a lot of people focus on, there are other things that you need to be aware of. So for example, if you've got diabetes, we also need to be aware of your blood sugar levels. If you've got any other chronic conditions that require any dietary restrictions, for example, a cardiac diet, they also need to be considered. What you wouldn't see in your bloods are things like salt levels. So although you measure sodium in your blood, that wouldn't be reflective of what's going on in your diet. So that would have to be discussed separately.
Fab. I just remembered I completely forgot to ask you to introduce yourself. So, after our first question, with a very detailed answer, hello Hilary.
Hello.
Hello. Would you like to introduce yourself?
So, having answered my first question already, my name's Hilary. I'm one of the renal dietitians at the Royal Liverpool Hospital. I've been doing renal for over 22 years now, so I suspect it's the job for me. And it's a job I really, really have loved for all these years because of the relationships that I get to form with patients, carers and families.
I told you I'm forgetful.
That's all right. I was looking at you over the table.
No difference whatsoever. Right, so now we know who you are. More questions. This one's from a dialysis patient. What food should kidney patients avoid whilst on dialysis?
This is a really difficult one to answer because it's very much dependent on blood results, appetite and your dialysis schedule. So there probably isn't a one diet fits all. What I would say is try and get to know your dialysis team, which will include a dietitian, so that you can talk through the foods that you like, your blood results, your dialysis schedule and trying to find a best fit for that. Simple foods that probably aren't the best on dialysis or anything that's going to be salty, and that's generally because it will make you thirsty and possibly push your blood pressure up, which are two problems that can lead to gained fluid between your sessions. So if you're having to remove lots and lots of fluid on your dialysis session, that's not a good thing. So by reducing your salt intake, you can control your thirst and hopefully control your blood pressure as well. One fallacy about dialysis is that you can eat what you want whilst you're on the machine because you're connected to a machine. But I think what you need to remember is that it doesn't go straight from your mouth to your arm or your neckline. And actually what you'll do is you'll absorb all these things about 4 to 6 hours after you've digested them, by which point you're off dialysis, you're sat at home and you're recovering. So it's not a good idea to be having foods that are high in potassium whilst on the machine. From that, there isn't really a good time to have all these high potassium foods either. So again, a lot of people will say, well, before dialysis is a really good time to do it because I'm going to dialysis and it'll come out. But what happens if your access is clotted or there's a water problem in the unit, or, you know, for whatever reason your dialysis is delayed and therefore you've not had the opportunity to clear out some of those high potassium foods? So it's being sensible, getting a good relationship with your dietitian so that you can have open and honest discussions about best diet for you.
Okay, so what foods can we add after transplant that we couldn't have before?
So with any luck, you get a good functioning kidney and that it works straight away. You start producing lots and lots of urine and your blood results all come down nicely. So at this point, we'd be looking to relax some of the dietary restrictions you have been having. We would probably try and do this in a step-by-step way so that it's not a case of you've gone straight back onto all your high potassium foods, which may cause a slight issue in the acute stage of your transplant. So We need to just keep an eye on all your figures. You'll be back and forwards to the transplant clinic in the initial stages anyway, getting your bloods done. And what we can do is we can release some of these dietary restrictions in a step-by-step manner. Going forward, though, you still need to have and protect your long-term health. So we wouldn't be advising things like lots of salt going back into your diet, and we would try and keep you to a healthy body weight so that you're not putting your long-term health at risk.
Could you give me an example of some high potassium foods?
So foods that everybody knows are high in potassium, which is a pub quiz question, tend to be bananas. So everybody talks about bananas. Most fruits and vegetables can be high in potassium, but they can be altered by boiling. So if your cooking method allows the boiling of your vegetable, your potato, you can actually reduce the potassium content of those foods. There are other random foods that are high in potassium, which people don't often know about, and certainly the doctors in A&E don't tend to ask you about. And that would be things like coffee, chocolate, crisps, things like that. So it's about getting an overall view of what your diet's doing. And it might be that you don't have to cut everything out that's high in potassium. If you were coming to see me in clinic, I would do it in a really step-by-step manner so that the diet is still reflective of the foods that you enjoy and the meals that you're still able to create at home.
So how important to the transplant EGFR, which is the function level, is the diet?
The diet probably isn't essential to that. It's more about how the kidney itself is functioning. But what you wouldn't want to do is put too much pressure on the kidney. So we would just advise a healthy, balanced, varied diet going forwards. Things also to be aware of are food hygiene. So we will talk to you about foodborne viruses, making sure that your hygiene within your kitchen is good, the way you've stacked your fridge is correct. And there'll also be things like trying to make sure that when you go to a barbecue or a buffet, for example, that the food is hot, that it's not been sat around, and that, especially in barbecued food, that it's cooked all the way through so that it's safe and you won't get any foodborne viruses.
And I know that when I go to a restaurant, I check out their food hygiene rating still 10 years later and try not to go to any that have a lower rating than 4 or 5.
I think that's really sensible. I'd also be really reluctant of things like carveries or the help yourself buffet type restaurants, because you can't guarantee how long that food's been sat out there under lights, essentially. So they're probably not the best advised restaurants to go to.
Okay, another question. Does being overweight cause issues for transplant patients?
So I think it's important to remember that being overweight, regardless of your kidney function, is not a good thing for your long-term health. So if you've been given a chance and been given a good kidney and you're getting good function from it, then you will need to do everything you can to maintain that for as long as it can. Now, keeping within a healthy weight will help with that, because what you don't want is other long-term health conditions creeping in and making your quality of life and your longevity of life less than it needs to be. One thing to consider getting onto the transplant list is that you do need to have what we call a BMI, which is body mass index, and it's a ratio of your height to weight to classify you in terms of how heavy you are. And if you're on the heavier side, your anaesthetic risk and your recovery risk post-transplant is greater. So in other words, it takes longer for you for these things to happen. So you're more at risk if you are of a heavier body weight. So the surgeons will risk assess you when you've been referred to them to be considered for a transplant and see what your weight is at that point. Often we will, as renal dietitians, get a referral to ask to help with weight reduction so that your BMI is within the range, usually up to a BMI of 30. In some situations, the transplant surgeons will consider up to a BMI of 35, but you need to be relatively fit otherwise in order to go ahead with this kind of surgery. Weight is important in all stages, and I think if you can try and keep it as near to what we would class a healthy weight as possible, the better outcomes for you.
Okay, next one. What's more important, good diet or good exercise, pre and post transplant?
So I would say that both are equally of importance, both pre and post transplant. For pre, what you want to do is make sure that you're in the best physical health possible, aside from your kidney condition, so that you are going into theatre as tip top as you can do. And certainly after transplant, you want to try and preserve everything for as long as you can. So what you don't want is to be going on and developing heart conditions because you've not been doing enough exercise, whereas you've got a perfectly functioning kidney. So it's about thinking long term as well. Yes, you've been given this gift of a new kidney, and life may well start again at that point, but you need to try and preserve that life for as long as you can. So a form of exercise that you can, that everybody can do, is using the Kidney Beam website, which is a specially designed exercise online program that has been developed, I think, in King's College London by a renal physiotherapist. So it's got various different degrees of exercise in various different intensities, including things that you can do whilst you're attached to a dialysis machine. So it's free to use and upload, and I think it's a really good resource that people can use in their own home, so you're not having to go and join gyms or feel intimidated in exercise classes and things.
I shall pop a link up for Kidney Beam straight away after this podcast is released. Right, and now for all my personal questions, for all my problems.
Oh, be easy.
I've been suffering with gout and arthritis. Could that be related to my diet, or could I help with my diet?
I think that's a really difficult one to answer. There are definitely foods that can aggravate gout, but just the fact you've got kidney disease also increases your risk of gout and arthritis. So even making dietary changes probably aren't going to have a huge effect on that, unfortunately. Again, it's getting down to things like exercise and keeping yourself moving so that arthritis doesn't continue to get worse and stiffen those joints. But from a gout point of view, it's probably down to kidney disease, I'm afraid.
Yeah, probably is, but definitely cutting out. I found, personally, cutting out alcohol, steak and chocolate, which are all lovely things, but cutting them out has definitely helped, or eating them less often.
I think that's really sensible. I think different people will react to different foods.
I call it steak toe.
Yes.
I get steak toe, which is ridiculous. And what was the other one? I think, was it beer finger?
Yeah,
I get it in one specific finger when I drink beer. So I don't anymore. But yeah, steak toe.
I think the other problem with gout is to try and help with the crystallisation, you need a really good fluid intake. And if you're on a fluid restriction, or you're at that stage where we're talking to you about cutting down on your fluids, that can be really difficult to achieve.
And I know you can take drugs for gout.
Yes.
But I personally can't, because I'm on conflicting drugs. So a lot of people will probably be on allopurinol.
Yes.
But I specifically can't have that one.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
That makes it quite tough.
Yeah. No steak. So, but related to that, I'm now at stage 5.
Yep.
Less than 15% function. How much protein should I be eating?
So at this stage, we would not be pushing too much on your protein intake. What we don't want to do is put too much pressure on your kidneys to have to deal with lots of protein. But it's a balance between your overall nutrition and what your kidney function is doing, because what we don't want you to do is start losing weight in a malnourished fashion just because you're at that stage of CKD5. So again, it's probably making friends with your local dietitian to try and get a balanced meal plan that's suitable not only for the stage of your kidney disease, but also the foods that you're enjoying, and then they'll be able to advise on appropriate protein intakes. What happens when you then start dialysis is you need more protein because of the process that your body's going through and the impact dialysis has on you. So protein will change at all stages of the kidney disease.
So should I be on a special diet now at 10% function?
I think probably not. What I would say is steak's probably out for you, but that's for a different reason. Yeah, for you. But I wouldn't be drinking gallons of milk at this stage. I'd just be having a sensible protein intake. What we're finding in the supermarkets now is lots of 20 gram protein.
Oh, I'm hating it.
Dairy products.
I seem to be the only person that hates all the protein bars and the here's cereal with extra protein. And it's like, I just want the basic stuff.
And I think at your stage, that's a really good idea. I think if you're pushing too much protein, a yogurt that's got 20 grams of protein is far too much, given that you're...
So to finish up, we have a funny story.
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this for weeks since you asked me to do this podcast. And I have... There are a lot of stories. Often I find it quite amusing what people think about diets. So they'll come up with some wacky suggestions of what they've read or seen on the internet. But this one particular patient I want to tell you about was a long-term dialysis patient. He'd stopped passing urine altogether, and we were really struggling with his fluid restriction, which would be 500 mils a day. So a standard, one of those bottles of water that you buy with your meal deals in Tesco's, for all your fluids for the day, including all the water that you need to take with your tablets and things. So he was really, really struggling. So he phoned me up one day and he said, I've got a brilliant idea. I said, okay. And he went on to describe this sauna suit that he'd bought from the internet, thinking that if he walked around in it when he was at home, he would lose weight and fluids that way, and then be able to drink it because it was a way of allowing him some more fluid intake. So he did it one day, and he asked my advice, and I essentially laughed at him and said, I think this is a really ridiculous idea. I think you're putting yourself at risk with your fistula clotting off and all sorts of other things. But he was determined to do it.
Can't be good for your blood pressure. Huh?
No, exactly. There were multiple red flags being raised. But he was determined to do it, and he said he was going to weigh himself before he went on the suit, and then when he came out of the suit to see actually how much he'd lost, and then convert that to how much he could drink. And he was really disappointed because he only lost about 50 grams. So all that effort that he'd gone to, and he was allowed an extra 50 mils to drink. So he soon gave that idea up. But I do always remember him when people talk to me about fluid restrictions and how I can, you know, try and help them and give them any tips that they can help to stick with the fluid restriction or increase how much they're allowed to drink.
Ice cubes.
Ice cubes are great. Not in drinks, though, because ice cubes melt.
Yeah, they are.
So you still end up drinking. Frozen grapes are a really good way of doing it. Because they fill the glass in terms of volume, but you don't drink them. So they'll cool down your drink. They'll give the perception that you've had a full drink.
And you get a healthy snack at the end.
Well, you can also eat them at the end. So they're quite good.
Fabulous. Well, thank you very much for coming along today.
Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. And tune in next time, guys. Not sure what we're doing for the next one. If you fancy being a guest, let me know. And any questions for Hillary, please send them through. I'm sure she'll be happy to answer them.
Absolutely.
Next time. Bye.
Bye.